Hello, welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. My name is Paul Robbie. I'm on the faculty here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And I'm bringing to you the appointed Old Testament lesson for the 14th Sunday after Pentecost, scheduled for August 29th. The Old Testament lesson comes from Proverbs, the great book of Proverbs, chapter 25. Verses 2 to 10. And this was chosen because it corresponds with the gospel lesson appointed, Luke 14, verses 1 to 14, especially the middle part, the parable of the wedding feast, where Jesus tells the parable of those who were invited to a feast. And when you're invited, do not take a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished says give place to another person and then shames you and makes you take a lowest spot, but rather sit at the lowest place so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. And the point of the parable is everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And that fits in with this, with what Jesus emphasizes later in Luke 14, the cost of discipleship. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And the last verse, verse 33 of that section, Luke 14, 33, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. So the whole emphasis on discipleship is taking the low spot of being a disciple of Jesus, and the last shall be first, rather than trying to take the high spot and try to be first. It fits in with that theme that you see a lot in Luke. The last will be first, the first will be last. God is the God of great reversals. He brings down the high and mighty, and he raises the nobodies who only have Jesus. Our Old Testament lesson kind of ties into this theme, Proverbs 25, starting with verse 1. Also these things are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, the king of Judah, transcribed. So this is the second collection of Solomon's Proverbs, collected by the scribes at the time of King Hezekiah. Apparently they were rummaging through the palace archives, and they found a lot of separate Proverbs of Solomon scattered here and there, and they collected them, transcribed them, put them together into one section. Which is interesting. It tells us that later kings would search the archives for materials from earlier kings. And here the Hezekiah's men find Proverbs from Solomon, who, of course, was 200 years before Hezekiah, even more, 250 years before Hezekiah. Okay. Then it starts with verse 2. These proverbs are focused on practical wisdom for kings and rulers, and also for citizens. Just a little bit more about proverbs. Proverbs fits under the category of practical wisdom. It's all under the umbrella of the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. And under that umbrella, this is practical wisdom for daily life, for making daily decisions, for your vocation in everyday life, for relating to people, relating to your neighbor, relating to the people, to the leaders and those in authority. Exercising your office. These are pieces of advice that are given by Solomon on the basis of his wisdom. And wisdom, of course, is a gift from God, and it's also exercised by experience and by observation. Solomon was a keen observer of daily life, of the way people operate, and a keen observer of actions and consequences. So if you do this, if you proceed this way, then this happens. If you proceed that way, then that happens. And then he was able to condense these observations into these memorable one-liners. So it's an important book. It tells us that God is interested not only in your in what goes on Sunday morning in public worship. God is also very interested in your daily life, your daily everyday decisions, how you relate to people, how you schedule your time, how you carry out your various duties. And Solomon gives us very wise advice, which through Christ is still wisdom for us as well. So let's start. Let's work through it. 25 verse 2. Kavod Elohim, the glory of God, and these are infinitives. It's actually a rare form. It's an infinitive construct, but it's written without the yod in the middle. The glory of God is to hide a matter. A devar is just a matter, a thing. But the glory of kings is to kakor, is to kakar, to search and investigate a matter. So it's making a contrast here between God and kings, human kings. The glory of God is that he hides some things from humans. He doesn't reveal everything, all the mysteries. And he is God and we are not. And his glory is that he keeps certain things to himself and makes us realize our limitations, makes us realize our place, that we do not have access to all of the mysteries of the universe. We are limited, finite creatures. We are not the creator. So that's God's glory. The glory of kings, on the other hand, is just the opposite. It is to investigate what's going on in their realm. A king should know what's going on, what's actually going on in the realm, what's actually happening. And we would label it be transparent, that he investigates what's going on in his kingdom and then reveals it. So he's very above board about everything. He's transparent. He's not hiding all kinds of secrets, making all kinds of insider secret deals and insider trading, but he's being very open with the citizens. This is a way of keeping the officials accountable and keeping everybody above board. So it's a contrast. The God hides certain things, but a king should actually investigate and make known certain things. Transparency. All right, verse 3. Heaven for height and earth for depth, and the heart of kings, there is no searching. So there is no searching. And then the following three clause follows it. It's unable to successfully search and discover all there is to know about the heavens in terms of their height and the earth in terms of its depth. It's impossible to climb up to the highest of the heavens, the highest galaxy, and search all of this. It's impossible to delve down into the depths of the earth, and it's impossible to successfully search the heart of kings. This is a warning against just relying on the flattery of a king. You don't really know what's in the king's heart, and that rather you should do things just as an honest person, and not without seeking the flattery of the king. So who knows what's in the heart of kings? Verse 4, the next piece of advice, Hago is an infinitive absolute of Haga. It means to remove. After removing dross from silver, Kali is the subject, a vessel went out to the smelter. Very often they'll use that verb yatsa in this connection for to cast. So a vessel is cast by a smelter. First remove the dross, then the vessel can be worked with. That's the point. And now verse 5 completes the thought. Again, Hago, after removing a wicked person before a king, then his throne, Kiso, will be established in righteousness. So a king's throne is established when the king has honest, innocent, righteous people in the court, and when the wicked crooks are removed from the palace. And in that sense, then, removing the crook is like removing the dross from the silver. Verses 4 and 5, then, advice for how the palace should work, how these people in leadership positions should work, and how they should get around themselves. Righteous people, he's talking about what we Lutherans call left-hand kingdom righteousness, civil righteousness. Verse 6, it's called a vetative. It's an al in front of a second person jussive form. This is how you do a negative imperative in Hebrew. Don't, and this is a hitpah, elav hadar, don't honor yourself before a king, and in the place of the great ones, do not stand. So don't take your stand in the seats of the great ones, of the nobles. Don't honor yourself before the king. Verse 7 then explains why. For, Tov, it is good that someone to say to you, so to say to you is good, come up here, then, this is a comparative men, then to bring you down, to make you low before a noble, whom your eyes have seen. Now, this is a good example of a comparative men, so the tov would be actually translated as better. It is better to say that someone would say to you, come up here, than that someone would bring you down to a lower position before a noble whom your eyes have seen. Of course, in ancient Israel, it wasn't all that common. It was a rare event for a private citizen to have an audience in the king's palace. And here would be an instance where he did have that opportunity, and he put himself forward. His eyes got to see the king personally, and then he was forced to take a lower seat. Than if he had originally started with the lower seat and then been promoted and brought up. This is the background to Jesus' statement in Luke 14. So what is Solomon advising? He's advising humility rather than self-promotion. Verse 8, again, the vetative. Do not go forth to litigate. Reeve means to go to court, to litigate maher quickly. Lest, what will you do in its aftermath? So after this process is over, what will you do when your neighbor, this is a hifil of kalam, shames you? So what will you do if the court decides against you and your neighbor puts you to shame because you hastily took your neighbor to court? So verse 8 is a warning against hasty litigation. Verse 9, Reeve is an imperative. Litigate your litigation with your neighbor, but the secret of another person do not uncover. So this is when you do litigate your litigation with your neighbor, do not reveal the secrets of others. That's a pl of gala, a pl jussive with the al, second person jussive. Do not reveal, do not uncover the secret of another person. This is a warning against being a gossip, being too free with the secrets of other people. And then verse 10 gives us the reason. Lest Shomer, the one who hears your gossip, shames you. This is a peel of Kasad. Shames you, and your reputation, your bad reputation, your Diba, your bad reputation, will not turn away, will not leave you. You'll have a bad reputation as a gossip, as a malicious witness, as talking out of school. And so this is a warning against against too freely revealing the secrets of others. It's a exhortation of preserving the reputation of others, trying to preserve the good reputation of others. Okay, those are the verses. Now let's talk about them a little bit. All of these verses strike me as very countercultural. You see just the opposite going on in American culture these days. There is not always that kind of transparency among officials and leaders like there should be. Wicked, there are many leaders who turn out to be corrupt and crooked, and they gather around themselves other corrupt and crooked people. There are a lot of people who are self-promoters. They're always promoting themselves, always advancing themselves, always glorifying themselves. And they end up then being put to shame when they're demoted. Their litigation is done way too easily and quickly in America today. Everybody wants to sue everybody. This is a real problem. And the good reputation of people is getting tarnished by others who are too free to talk out of school and reveal secrets. We have all of these expose type of periodicals that are basically gossip sheets, and this is Solomon is warning against that sort of thing. That sort of thing was happening already 3,000 years ago in Solomon's palace. Human nature doesn't really change. The propensities of sinners don't change. And that's why these 3,000-year-old texts still speak to us today. So what is Solomon saying? He's especially talking to Christians here. The application would be to Christian leaders. Exhortation for transparency, for knowledge of what's going on, for accountability, and exhortation for honest co-workers, and exhortation that the followers, the lower-level people, the citizens, would also deal in a righteous way with their leaders. Very, very, very helpful advice for all of us living in the United States. It's also helpful advice for how the church operates and how leaders in the church operate and how the Christians in the church operate, the lay people, and the proper relationship then, for instance, between pastors and lay people. This would speak to that as well. So we can learn about human wisdom. Ultimately, it flows to Christ and to that Luke 14 passage that Solomon's advice takes even a deeper turn through Jesus, where we learn that not only is this good advice for dealing with kings in this world, but that in a far deeper way, it's the theology of the cross. The last shall be first and the first shall be last. Those who deny themselves, take up their cross and follow Jesus. Those who live a cruciform existence in this life will be glorified on Judgment Day with Jesus. Whereas those who glorify themselves in this age will be humiliated on Judgment Day. So it's a theology of the cross type of message. And ultimately, we see as the paradigm of this, Jesus himself, who did not count equality with God something to be exploited, but instead took the form of a servant and humbled himself and became obedient unto death. And therefore, God the Father has highly exalted him and made his name above all every name. So Jesus is the paradigm of precisely this, of what Solomon was talking about. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. That's our appointed Old Testament lesson for the 14th Sunday after Pentecost. Thank you very much for listening to Lectionary at Lunch.